Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and on today's show, we're thinking about being happy, about looking for and finding happiness. You know, some people, it seems, spend their entire lives looking for true, long-lasting joy and don't seem to ever find it. And others seem to be effortlessly filled with it, surrounded by it wherever they are. You know, folks like either of those folks? Well, today we've got a couple of stories for you. They're both Scottish stories, and, well, we hope they make you happy. We think they will. The first story comes to us from Bill Harley, who tells the story of a guy who is rich. He's also a king. A recipe for happiness, that? Well, it depends on who you talk to, I guess. But this king is still searching. Here's Bill with a story called Happy Man's Shirt, recorded live in the Appleseed Studio.
So, I want to tell you my favorite story. It's a story I've carried with me a great part of my adult life, and it's not one of my stories. It's a story I learned from a traditional storyteller from Scotland that a lot of the storytellers knew. His name was Duncan Williamson, and Duncan was one of the traveler people in Scotland. And I met him at the National Storytelling Festival in 1986, and I followed him around like a puppy. And this was the first story I heard him tell, and I ended up visiting Duncan and spend some time with him in Scotland. He was designated a Scottish national treasure, and it was recorded hours and hours of his stories. I visited him. I said, "Duncan, how many stories do you know?" And he said, 5,500. Now, I think he was just making a number up, but what he was telling me was, I don't even know. And when I told him this was my favorite, he said, "Oh, that's the traveler story." So I tell it in my way, but this is for Duncan and all the people that are part of this long tradition. You do this for a long time. I've been doing it for really almost 50 years now. I understand that I'm part of something else that that came before me and goes on after me. It's called the Happy Man's Shirt. Once there was a king who had everything, but he wasn't happy. His wife, the queen, was beautiful and intelligent. He had children, a prince and princess, and handsome and beautiful in turn and intelligent. And he had a huge kingdom and a beautiful castle and a stable filled with all sorts of horses. He had everything you could want, but he wasn't happy. And his wife, the queen, would say, "What's wrong with you? Why aren't you happy?" He said, "I don't know." She said, "What can I do?" He said, no, it's okay. It's all right." Well, it might have been all right for him, but it wasn't all right for her. Bothered her. So she went to the wise men. They had this whole stable of wise men. And she asked them one after another, "What can I do to make my husband happy?" And someone said, "Well, have a big banquet, you know, and he can see all his friends. Or get him a new horse. Or let's get him a new wardrobe. Or let's put an addition on a castle. Let's send his army out to conquer more land." And one after another, wise men offered all these things. And they just went down the line. And they did all those things. And he still wasn't happy. And she said, "What's wrong with you?" He said, "It's okay. It's just the way I am." Finally, she got to the end, the last wise man. It's always the last place you look, I guess. And she said, "What can I do? What can I do?" And the wise man looked at her and said, "If the king would be happy, he must find and wear a happy man's shirt." She said, "Great." So she called the guard. She said, "Get in here." She said, "I want you to go out in the kingdom. I want you to find a happy man, get a shirt, and bring the shirt back." So they went out in the kingdom and they scoured the kingdom looking for a happy man. And wouldn't you know, they couldn't seem to find one. They say, "Are you happy?" I say, "No." "Why not?" "Oh, I'm poor. I can't make ends meet." "Are you happy?" No. I have so many things to do." And they came back and they told the queen, and she went back to the wise man. She said, "We've looked over the kingdom. We can't find a happy man." And the wise man said, "I did not say you. I did not say the guards. I said the king. only the king can find the happy man and get his shirt. So she goes back to the king and she says, how are you? He said, I'm okay. She said, look, I'm at the end of my rope. And the last wise man, he says, if you want to be happy, you have to go out and you find a happy man. You have to get a shirt and bring him back. Would you do that for me, please? And he said, okay, if it makes you happy, I'll go do it. And he goes the next day. Goes out the back door of the castle, doesn't go in his robes, doesn't wear his crown, he doesn't go on his milk-white steed. He just goes out in the clothes of an everyday person, you know, like wearing his Carhartts or something. And he begins to look for a happy man. And don't you know, he can't find anyone either. Are you happy? No. I can barely make ends meet. Are you happy? No. There's so many things, I can't get them all done. And this bothers him. And he stays out the next day and the next day. He becomes obsessed, I have to find a happy man. And then he begins to worry, is this whole kingdom unhappy because of me? And he won't go back to the castle. He stays out for days and then weeks and even months looking for a happy man. And he can't find him. And his hair grows long and unkempt. His beard grows down. He wears holes in the elbows of his jacket and the knees of his pants, the soles of his shoes. Birds are making their nest in his beard, and he's sleeping out in the open looking for a happy man, and he can't find him. Well, back at the castle, the queen grows lonely, and she calls the guard. She says, I want you to go back out there and find him. Just come bring him back here. I'd rather have him back here and miserable than out there wandering around. So the guards go out to look for the king. And just about that time, the next morning or morning after that, they're looking for him. And the king is in kind of a distant part of the kingdom. And he comes over a ridge and a hill, and he comes down into a valley. And he sees a river, a stream, and he decides he's going to ford. He's going to cross the river. And he looks and he finds this shallow spot. And he's going to cross it, but as he comes up to it, he sees there's a beggar man. The beggar man's sitting on a log right by the where he's going to cross over, and he's got a little fire going. His beggar man, he's got this coat that's pulled up over his shoulders. It's a very cool morning, and he's heating up some water in a little tin to make some tea. And Duncan didn't tell me this, but I can only imagine he's singing something like, oh, what a beautiful morning, oh, what a beautiful day, I got a beautiful... And he sees the king and says, hey, come over here, get over here. King says, what? He said, get over here right now. Well, no one's ever spoken to the king like that, but he goes over here. The beggar man says, you sit right down, right there. King sits down, he says, I got something for you, it's good for what ails you. You just wait till you have some of this. And he reaches over and he reaches back, he pulls out this little cup, this little tin cup, and he takes some of the tea that's been boiling on the fire, and he says, you take a sip of that, you're gonna love it. And the king takes it and sips it, and it's bitter. But the beggar man smacks him on the back and said, isn't that the best cup of tea you ever had in your whole life? And in spite of himself, the king smiles. So they start to talk, and the king says, who are you? Who am I? Yeah, who are you? Whoa, look at me. I'm a beggar man. That's what I am. I don't care what you call me. Just don't call me down. So the king is talking with this guy. Now he's kind of genuinely interested in what's going on. He's asking about this and this, and the beggar man's talking about all the places he's been. And the king says, maybe I found him. So he turns to the beggar man. He said, I got a question for you. Beggar man says, go ahead, fire away. I'm full of answers. 17, maybe, who knows, yellow. I don't know. What do you want to ask me? Are you happy? The beggar man said, what? He said, are you happy? Are you a happy man? The beggar man says, well, yeah, I am. You happy? Yeah, I'm happiest man in the world. King says, well, why are you happy? I never really thought about it. I'll tell you why I'm happy. I didn't get wet. Yeah. It was cloudy last night. I'm like, you are going to be one wet puppy in the morning, but guess what? It didn't rain. I'm dry. You can't always count on that, right? You know, and look, I got something to eat today. I don't have to worry about that. And the sun's shining, and I know the road. Oh. He says, yeah. I see what you're after. You're looking at me. Like, I don't have much. But listen, it's true. I don't have much, but... You know, I don't have to worry about whether somebody's going to take it from me or what I should be giving away.
I just travel around. I do the best I can. I be as kind as I can to everybody. You tell me, why shouldn't I be happy?
The king says, I can't believe I found you. The beggar man said, well, I didn't know you were looking for me.
The king says, I've been looking all over for you. He said, well, here I am. The king says, do you know who I am? And the beggar man looks at him and he says, well, you're a beggar man like me. He says, no, I'm not. And he says, well, that's what you're looking like. And the king says, no, I am the king.
And the beggar man looks at the king. He says, you are the king.
Yeah, I'm the king. This is all mine.
The beggar man says, okay.
He says, I don't know what you are, but you're not the king.
Yes, I am. No, you're not. Yes, I am. No, you're not.
I am the king. No, you're not. I am the king. No. You know why? I'm the king. I'm the king. I'm the king. I'm the king. They're arguing back and forth. And the big man says, we're both kings. And the king says, I am the king. I'm telling you. And the big man starts to laugh. And the king says, what's so funny? And there's tears coming down the beggar man's face. He says, fella, look at you. You're not the king.
And the king sees himself. And he starts to laugh.
He says, you're the king. He said, no, the king. They're both kings. And they start to dance around. We're the kings. And they fall down on their knees. They start laughing and they can't stop laughing. And they're rolling on their sides. They're holding. We're both kings. And it's a folk tale. That's when the guards show up, right? The guards show up. They come over the hill on their horses. They see the king rolling around on the ground with a beggar man. They throw themselves off their horses and said, your majesty, we found you. We found you. And the king said, I told you. And the beggar man said, I didn't know. I didn't know. He said, I'm the king. I said, no, 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 no. I'm so sorry. I did.
Shh. Don't you apologize to me. Don't apologize to me. No. Because you reminded me of what happiness is about. He said, well, I just didn't know. Shh, stop it. And then the captain of the guards came up and he said, your majesty, your wife wants you back. And the king said, yeah, well, there's that. And he turns to the beggar man. And he says, I gotta go. The beggar man said, yeah, I know, you're the king. And the king says, but I gotta ask a favor of you. The beggar man said, a favor of me? Yeah, just one. Well, I don't have much, but whatever I have is yours. The king said, good. I like your shirt. And the beggar man said, you want my shirt? The king says, yes, I want your shirt. And the beggar man starts laughing, and then the king starts laughing, and all the guards are laughing. They're not sure why. The king says, what's going on? And the beggar man looks at the king, and he pulls open his coat. He says, I have no shirt. And the king laughs and says, then you'll never want for another shirt as long as you live, because I want you to come back and live with me to remind me what happiness is about. And he climbed up on the horse that the guards had brought, and he pulled the beggar man up behind him, and they rode back through the kingdom. And then they came to the castle, and they came in the front hall of the castle with their arms around each other. And the queen heard some laughing, and she came out in the center hall. She found her husband returned dressed in rags with his arms around a beggar man. She said, you're back. He said, yeah. Found a happy man who doesn't have a shirt. And the beggar man stayed with the king. They did pretty well. Although, there was many a meal that was ruined because they would sit at that grand table, the king and the queen at the head of it, and just a little bit down a ways, the beggar man, and they'd be halfway through the meal. And the king would hear someone say, psst, hey, he'd look up, and the beggar man would look at him and go, and the king would start laughing. The beggar man would laugh, and they'd follow. And the queen would say, would you stop it? And they wouldn't. But she decided if that was what was required, it was fine. Now, I want to say one more thing about this story, which is when I heard Duncan tell this all those years ago, almost 40 years ago, I was a young man, and I felt like I had the weight of the world on me, trying to raise a family, trying to make a living as a storyteller, a ridiculous proposition. And I remember thinking, why didn't he just stay out there with a beggar man? But now I'm older, and I understand that what Duncan was saying, what the story is saying, one thing it says is that everybody has a castle that they live in, where we make our world. And we live there. But when we live there, we have to make sure we have room in our hearts for the beggar man. And that's the story of Happy Man Shirt I learned from Duncan Williamson.
That was Bill Harley with his story, Happy Man's Shirt. Listening to this story, it reminds me of a Peanuts comic I read when I was a kid. It's one of those where Charlie Brown and Linus are hanging out at the wall, and Linus asks Charlie Brown if he has a life philosophy. And Charlie Brown says, "The secret to happiness is to have three things to look forward to and nothing to dread." And Linus says, "I think there's a difference between a life philosophy and a bumper sticker." Well, I read that comic when I was, I don't know, 8 years old, I guess. And it wasn't the only time I'd think seriously about the nature of happiness and how it comes to someone, but it might have been the first time. And since then, I've sometimes asked people what happiness was to them, how they best bring happiness into their lives. And one friend said that she thought that happiness was something people should try to bring into each other's lives, that I should try to make you happy and you should try to make me happy. And another friend said she didn't think people could ever make one another happy for very long, and that happiness had to be found deep inside oneself and not in another person. There always seems to be a new and different answer from everyone to whom I ever ask that question. One answer that comes back to my mind a lot was from a friend who said he thought happiness was the best thing in the world, but that it doesn't make a good goal in and of itself. He thought that happiness was a byproduct, something that comes to you when you're working to follow your innermost compass, when you're diligent in doing the things that your soul knows are right to do. It's when you're doing that, said my friend, that happiness comes to you on its own. Well, I don't hate any of the answers I've ever gotten to that question. There are, I suppose, as many answers as there are people. What to you is happiness? How do you bring it into your life? I'm thinking of that question right now, in fact. It's where Bill's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along? There's a lot coming up, but I wanted to take just a moment to let you know about another show from among the BYU Radio family of podcasts. The podcast is called Constant Wonder, and it's hosted by Marcus Smith. In each episode, Marcus takes you on kind of a quest to find the awe and wonder in all nature, human or wild. Not just interested in the natural world, interested in human nature as well. Marcus's guests tell fascinating stories and talk about experiences that have left them awestruck. You'll love the podcast. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of places to listen to Constant Wonder anytime you need a little dose of awe or wonder in your life. Constant Wonder from BYU Radio. We're so glad to have you with us today on The Appleseed. The next story we have on our show is a story about an onion. Now, I don't know how you feel about onions. Me, I love them. I eat them on everything. Some people I know aren't so fond, though. What's an onion really worth in the end? Find out with Debs Newbold with a story called The Giant Onion, recorded live in the Appleseed studio. Here's Debs.
So there was a poor cotter, and a cotter is a tenant farmer, somebody who had a little strip of land that they could use to make the vegetables and keep the livestock that they needed to keep themselves alive. So they relied on the seasons a lot, and they tended to be not very well off. And they were usually tenants of a lord of the manor who owned all of the land that the strips were part of. And there's this poor cotter I want to tell you about. One year, I mean, he was good. He had green fingers, as we say in England. He was good at gardening. He grew all sorts of vegetables and fruits. But one year, he had a terrible harvest. All his crops failed, all but one. an onion. One onion. That snaked out its tendrils under the ground, sucking up all of the moisture and the nutrients. No wonder nothing else had the heart to grow. This onion added layer upon layer to its gargantuan self, week on week, month on month. This thing swelled under the ground. The poor old cotter, though, this is terrible for him because he can't feed himself. Luckily, though, the cotter was part of a community, and the community of other tenant farmers did what communities do. They pitched in, they helped him through the winter, they fed him. They even, when spring came around, decided that they would help him dig this onion up. It took them fully 3 hours to dig the thing out, heaving it out, pulling. When it finally came out of the ground, it was like a jet engine with a taproot. It was a thing of gargantuan wonder, this thing, and it was a bit smelly also. But it was just incredible. You could stand next to it. It was probably about as high as me, this onion. This is all true, by the way. High up on the hill, as this was happening, this caper was happening, the Lord of the Manor, Lord Allium, was looking out of his mansion house, down at the tenant farmers, who seemed to be having a jolly old time digging up a frousty old onion, albeit a massive one. Look at them laughing down there. He looked at them sneeringly. He hated the jocular poor. He didn't like them to be so... Why, what have they got to laugh about? Their lives are supposed to be awful. Why are they so happy? And what is that thing down there? Onion messing up my lovely long strips. I mean, what are they doing? Well, down there, what they were doing was they were deciding what to do with this onion. Shall we cook it? No. Can't cook it. It's too stringy. It'd be fibrous. Look at the size of it. You'd never get a knife big enough to chop it either, would you? No. Oh, we could exhibit it, says another neighbour. We could charge people a penny a look. But the cotter decided that he knew exactly what he was going to do with it. He was going to wrap it up in the best sackcloth he could find and take it as a gift to the Queen. Because the Queen, she was one of those monarchs who was jocular herself. She loved a novelty. She was tickled pink by a curiosity. And the cotter knew that it would make her very, very happy. So he wrapped it up and he tied it with a little bit of rag and he hefted it onto his back because he didn't have a horse, but he was very strong. He walked up the hill towards the castle. And Lord Allium watched sneeringly as he made his way up. Thought to himself, that's pathetic, isn't it? Why is he taking a massive onion to the Queen? You see, if there's one thing that Lord Allium hated more than the jocular poor, it was onions. He didn't like the smell, didn't like the feel, didn't like the texture, didn't like the sound they make when you put them in the frying pan. I mean, most of us love that, right? Not Lord Allium. Couldn't stand it. He couldn't understand why this cotter was going up to the castle with this pathetic gift for the Queen. It never dawned on Lord Allium that maybe somebody gives something to someone just to make them happy. But Lord Allium thought to himself, I could give something to the Queen. What could I give? To be honest, Lord Allium was an avaricious person. He didn't really like to give things away. He watched like a hawk as the cotter made his way up the hill into the castle. Now, inside the castle, when the onion was delivered to the Queen and she opened it, wow! She'd never seen any kind of vegetable as large as that. She was tickled pink. She thought it was the most wonderful thing she'd ever said. Oh, well, that's fantastic, she said. Although it does smell a bit. Could you put it in the buttery? Take it away. But oh, it's lovely, she thought to herself. And she noticed the poor sackcloth and rag that it was tied in and realised that it must have been given to her by a very poor farmer. And a poor farmer, honouring his queen with such generosity, deserves a really big, huge reward. And she thought, what can it be? What would be good for him? I know. And she sent 3 bags of gold... to the cotter's house. And Lord Allium watched these 3 bags of gold be delivered with mounting derision. Oh, so he gets 3 bags of gold for a frousty old onion, massive, horrible, fibrous thing. What have I got? What has the Queen ever given me? He thought to himself. All his money was hard earned by exploiting the local poor. He'd never been given a free thing in his life. The cotter surprised him even more, by the way, with what he did with his gold. He kept some for himself, of course, against a rainy day. He gave some generously to the community that had helped him, and he used the rest to throw a massive party. Lord Allium was invited, but he declined. He didn't like parties, especially not with that lot down there. He looked down again from the window of his house, sneeringly at the horrible tower of yucky, greasy sausage rolls. Ugh. And he poured scorn on the cheap barley wine they were drinking. And then when they got the sackbut out, you know the sackbut? It's the old version of the trombone. The sackbut's parping was to Lord Allium's ears what an onion was to his nose and his nasal passages. When they started doing sackbut karaoke, Lord Allium sniffed, called it a night, shut the windows and got into bed in a huff. And as he lay there in his silk pyjamas, he thought, what have they got to smile about, eh? They're poor, they're supposed to be unhappy. And how dare he take an onion to honour the Queen? If I took something to the Queen, she'd have to honour me, wouldn't she? I've got things I could give the Queen. And he went through his mental index that he'd been thinking of for a few days now, and he realised that he had excellent stables. Many, many wondrous stallions. What would the Queen give him if he honoured her with one of those? So the very next morning, he went down to the stables and he picked out the second best stallion. And he had it prepared. He had it massaged and oiled with unguents. Had the best saddle laid over its back. Tied a silk ribbon round its neck himself and had it sent up to the Queen. And when the Queen received this gift, she was delighted. It was a fantastic specimen. I mean, she did have a whole stable full of horses herself, but this would be a lovely addition. She was well chuffed, as we say. And she had it sent to the stables to join its new friends. And she thought to herself, well, I can see by the quality of the saddle alone that this gift has come from a very, very grand nobleman. And a grand nobleman who honours his queen like this deserves a really massive gift. What could it be? A few days later, the Lord Allium, was in his house, waiting expectantly, and he saw the Queen's messengers draw up in their carriage. Oh, his heart was fluttering. He went to the door before they'd even knocked it, opened it, and there on the ground between them was these two servants was a huge box, oak box, ornate, carved and inlaid with marquetry. It was a thing of beauty. It was closed with two stout leather straps. If this box alone were the gift the Queen was honouring him with, it would be gift enough, but thinks Lord Allium, think about all the gold that's in that box for my stallion. Yes! It took four of his servants to drag the box inside, and his fingers, deft from the counting of money, itched to open those straps, but he thought, no. There's only one thing that would make this moment sweeter. An audience. So he threw a party, and he invited everybody to it. Local noblemen, the few friends that he had, people that he hated. He just wanted them to come and see him, get honoured by the Queen. He particularly made sure that all of the local tenant farmers were invited with guest of honour, the poor cotter. That'll show him, won't it? Never mind his frousty old onion. Never mind his three bags of gold. Well, there were canapes, there were drinks, the wine was good, there was not a sackbut in sight, no karaoke. When everyone had drunk and danced their fill and were having a wonderful time, when the party was about to reach its zenith, Lord Allium cut it, made everyone shh, be quiet. And he mounted with some regality a wooden stage that he'd had erected at the back end of the hall for just this purpose. And on the stage was the box. And Lord Allium turned to the assembled crowd, who really did want to get back to the canapes and were hoping for some karaoke, but he stopped them. He said, "Nope, listen to me. Now, not long ago, I sent my prize stallion as a gift to honour Our Lady the Queen. And she, in return, has delivered unto me this gift of untold treasure to honour me, Lord Allium. Behold." And with his nimble fingers, he undid the straps and he pulled open the box. And inside there was a silk bag, tied with a velvet ribbon, and Lord Allium pulled expectantly upon the bow of the velvet ribbon, and everything went into slow motion. The crowd leaned forward. The hush descended. The silk fell back, boo, boo, and Lord Allium's proud, sneering face collapsed like a falling tower of greasy sausage rolls. When that bag fell open to reveal the Queen's gift, the largest, stinkiest onion you have ever seen. Thank you.
That was Debs Newbold with The Giant Onion. What brings you real happiness? Can you describe how happiness feels to you when you're feeling it? Is there a time you look back on as a happy, happy time? Are there people at the center of your happiest memories? Who are they? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. And here's a reminder to check out the Appleseed lesson plans on our website, byuradio.org. Whether you're a teacher, homeschooler, or parent, you'll find lots of lessons and storytelling activities based on some of your favorite Appleseed stories. Find us on the Appleseed page under the For Educators tab. That's byuradio.org, the Appleseed page. The Four Educators tab. And we want to thank Bill Harley and Debs Newbold for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, and Brian Tanner. Assistant producers include Garrett Gunnell, Carrie Griggs, Kay Hendrickson, and Nico Wetzel. And our post team is Trent Reimschussel and DJ Cromartie. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcasts, Kaboom for original audio adventures, and Wink, stories for better bedtimes. All our podcasts can be found on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on the BYU Radio app or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, leave us a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on the Appleseed.